Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again. Here we are in Susie's kitchen. It's so nice to be sitting at a table with you in the kitchen.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It feels like no time at all and forever since we last did this.
Well, I'm sorry, everybody. We were a little bit quiet on the last two. We were sitting in my garden under the apple tree and we sort of lay back and relaxed and got a little too far from the microphone. So we'll try and do better. Today, well, we're in August. It's cold and we're both wearing the equivalent of cardies. It's outrageous, but it's Lammas. Tell me about Lammas, would you?
Okay, that word for me has no meaning at all.
I'm sorry, it's the Christian word, because we nicked Lammas, there's no doubt about it. We nicked this festival of the first fruits and put it in the churches. The idea was, I think, to stay in touch with the people and the lamb, but it's not really a Christian festival, is it?
Is it? I don't know.
It's the festival of the 1st of August of the first fruits.
Is it not the harvest? Is that not the harvest festival?
No, harvest is after Michaelmas, which is September.
Oh, okay. I get them all very mixed up. Yeah, so for me, it's the celebration of the beginning of the harvest, of the time to really set about gathering all that has grown and flowered and is beginning to fruit. It's inextricably linked in my bodily experience with haymaking. I was haymaking every single August as a child, as a sort of later childhood and all throughout my teenage years. And so August is the humping of the hay month, and therefore...
Or humping in the hay, possibly.
No, not really. Much too good a girl.
Sorry.
trust you. And yeah, so for me, it's the time, I mean, now that I no longer bail cart, it's that time where everything in the garden is starting to go, take me, take me, take me. And that... You know, it's, I guess my main personal experience of it is the drying of herbs and flowers for remedies and teas throughout winter.
And how do you dry them? Do you just hang them up or?
Most of them, herbs in particular, anything with teeny tiny flowers and teeny tiny leaves. Yes, well, there's a big beam in the kitchen above our heads and it is still got a smattering of what was dried last year that wasn't used. And so all of the kitchen ceiling becomes awash with gorgeous garlands of green, which slowly turn brown over August and September. And it all smells delicious in here. And it is, you know, genuinely, it's the best place to dry them. Heat rises. This is the room where the people are all the time. This is the place where we light the first fires in winter. And so they will dry. And I do have that wondrous newfangled contraption of modern times, a dehydrator, which is fantastic, but not for herbs. I've got probably the cheapest dehydrator money can buy, and the holes are a bit too big, so when you dry herbs, all the tiddly bits fall through down into the element. So it's really not so good, but it's great for things like rose petals, which my experience of trying to dry rose petals was that they, half of them composted themselves before they ever got dry. Which
my
was,
experience of drying anything is that half of it composts itself. I'm not very good at this yet.
Okay. So yeah, what you can hang up because it's tiddly, hang up really works. But things like rose petals, mushrooms, apple flesh, all of those things I used to dry. The non-compost method was to light the fire on very, very low and dry them on cooling racks in the oven. But, I mean, it just takes ridiculous hours. And in fact, in a dehydrator, it's very quick, very effective, and such a fantastic way of storing food for winter to dry it, especially in, you know, in Dartmoor, other methods of storage that don't include drying something out and sticking it in a totally damp proof jar just aren't really that successful because it's so damp here. You can't leave things out unless they're hanging from the ceiling.
Yes, and we're 1,000 feet up, so even more so, we've got winds all the time, and there's always some kind of moisture in the wind. So my only way of drying things is when the Rayburn's on, to put them in the bottom place where you're meant to put the lamb.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's
nobody's ever bought us a lamb to put in our Rayburn. It's outrageous.
That's
a living
place.
Lamb, that is. Yes. A living lamb that needs a little TLC. Not living lambs have lived in our Rayburn, but moving swiftly. Not lived, no. So you do call it this time, you mentioned it on Facebook, a lovely name beginning with L that I
Lunasa.
Can't...
Lunasa.
Lunasa.
Yeah, or Lufnasa. Not quite... Yeah, Lunasa, Lufnasa, I've heard it pronounced different ways. I mean, I don't actually know the origin of the word, but to me, what it means is first harvest. This is the time of first harvest. This is the time. Like I said, it's just so loud out there. You go out there at this time of year, and it does, for me, it had already started. There was already, when I'm walking through the fields, in particular, yarrow, plantain, dandelion leaves, in particular, going, stop, me, pick me. And really, like, sometimes I'll walk past and I can, having felt the kind of me, I can feel the disgust, literally, that, like, you know, what? You walk past. I was telling me to get you. I had to turn around and go back. And, you know, I'm sure I sound like a first-rate nutter to those that don't listen in that way. But to my ears, my witchy ears, for example, out there, there is a massive great swathe of marjoram, which is a kind of English version of oregano. It's oregano, oregano marjoram, isn't it? Rather than oregano vulgaris.
Yeah.
It grows like a weed up here. It's so happy. And it's all there, just, you know, starting to be bedecked in its gorgeous purple flowers, going, I'm ready for you, darling. And just wanting to be picked. And it knows that
non-binary. I'm actually going listen.
Listen. Listen. Oh, listen's fab.
Yeah, and I completely distracted. We'll come back to marjoram and oregano. Must come back to marjoram and oregano and gathering. But we had a delivery from My Hermes or somewhere this week, and the person who delivered it was in a masculine body with bright purple long hair and makeup. So I said to him, because Lion, bless him, was sort of going, because he's very bloke, his Lion, and he just didn't know whether to address it or say anything or not. And I just said, oh, hello, are you transitioning? And it just came straight out in a blurt. Mm. And he went, well, yes. He's still a he, but he's going to move over to a she. And I said, I've been thinking, my friend Susie and I have been thinking about pronouns, because we are becoming more gender fluid and we need to. It's part of the process of the cracking of the spell of the patriarchy. Mm. And I just came up with thisn, as in he, she, or thisn, this one, this human.
One, yeah.
And I just kind of liked it, and he seemed to like it too. So, but he wasn't bothered about being a he or a she anyway.
Right.
He didn't have a gender pronoun problem.
Preference.
But anyway, I just thought it just came out of the blue. This one.
Lovely. I absolutely adore that. That speaks to my heart in a way that chi and the other words that people have come up with didn't. I love it.
It's
Thank
this
you.
Human, isn't it? Yes.
Well, this being.
This being.
This being
this
that
one.
Could be so much more or
yeah.
other than human.
Yeah.
Thisn.
Yeah, my drum over there is a thisn. Susie's husband is painting a peacock butterfly on my drum. Oh, I'm so happy. Anyway.
Spiritorial whisper.
So back to the gathering. I do now know what you mean. I've been working with this since reading Braiding Sweetgrass, and just trying. Ever since we moved here, I've been saying, "What do you need to show me? What am I here for? Why?" Because of the compulsion to come was so powerful. And two little stories. I'm growing loads and loads of onions, and I went out to the garden and asked permission to pick an onion. And it wasn't until I pulled it I realised it had said no. And I was going, oh my God, I didn't get the message in time. But there was definitely a message. So I apologised profusely. And I said to you, oh Lord, I'm not getting it right. But bless you, you said, yes, but at least you did hear afterwards. You're getting there. And I was walking the Beagle the other day, and we were walking past a house which had the most amazing wild rose hips. Mm. They were like tomatoes.
Wow.
They were extraordinary. And they just yelled at me, take us! And I had to say, I cannot, because you are on land belonging to somebody who might not give me permission. But of course, there was complete incomprehension about that, of what I sensed. But it was the first time I've actually experienced what you're talking about, which is, look at us, we're here! Yes.
Whoop, whoop! Yeah, glorious. Yeah. And it seems to me that it's, I mean, again, this is our birthright. You know, when we, some people in the West, I know, have read books like The Wondrous Thing That Is Braiding Sweetgrass and kind of wept that they feel almost as if their connection to the experience of being able to do something like listen to the plant or ask permission and then receive an answer has been taken from them so far back in history that there's absolutely not a chance that they, typically white, female, belonging to the consumer culture, mm. feel as if they couldn't ever get that back. And it's that's so not the case. It's not the case. Our birthright. Our bodies are not palpably different to the bodies of the ancestors who knew this stuff. It still runs in our blood. It's still encoded in the marrow of our being. And we can, any of us who want to, can, you know, through that marvelous, marvelous triad of our will to do so, our willingness to listen, and our commitment to actually, you know, be quiet for long enough to listen properly and to receive the answer. Of course we can, and I'm so happy that you have, and woohoo.
Well, and also I love to meld it with my own tradition. In the Jewish mystical tradition, for example, on the Tree of Life, the place known as Yesod is the, I think you call it the sacral chakra, I call it the gonadic chakra, the sex organ part, mm-hmm. you know, that aspect of you. And it, but that's the cat flap between your psyche and your body. That's where the gut instinct is.
Mm.
And nowadays, a lot of people can't trust their gut instinct because it's based on addiction to foods. Yeah. Or something. But if you clear that, if you allow your body to speak, it will tell you all these really important things. And I only learnt that because I was trained how to use the throat chakra or the d'art point, which is the cat flap between psyche and spirit. And more and more, it goes either way. You know,
it's fantastic. Such a clear metaphor. It's gorgeous. Hilarious.
But it's so obvious to me that if you don't work, those two are related, those two chakras in the chakra system and in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, those two sephirot are related to each other. And if you don't clear the one at the bottom first, the one at the top will be corrupt.
That's absolutely, oh God, this might be wrong, okay, but I think that I read that there are actually more brain cells in your belly than there are in your head.
I think you're right. I was watching, what's his name? I wrote it down because there's a wonderful book called When Your Body Says No by Dr. Gabor Mate.
Uh-huh.
And I was listening to him on YouTube this morning. I had a nice morning in bed resting because my body told me it needed it.
Oh.
And I listened to a talk he gave. And he was actually saying that this gut instinct, it gets suppressed so young
mm.
because the way we work is that as a child you need attention. You mm-hmm. have to have attention to survive. The orphanages in Romania where the children were just chained to bed, the only ones who survived were the ones by the door who had actually a relationship with people passing. Even though they were fed, their soul knew they couldn't grow up. They had no training. They had no way of living in the tribe. It is horrific, God. Isn't it? It's a long time ago now. But, you know, a child needs attention. It needs the gaze of the mother, you know, while breastfeeding. And it needs to be in relationship. Mm. And we really aren't getting this very well. And what he was talking about is, I'm sure a lot of people psychologically know this already, is that the child will do whatever is needed to get the attention it needs to grow up. Mm. And quite often that involves sitting on your dreams, sitting on your little visions, not telling people when you're angry, not speaking out, that kind of thing. I've got an example from my childhood. I was never actually what you would call sexually abused, but I was dragged out under my brother's bed, from under my brother's bed, in order to kiss the doctor because my mother wanted me to kiss him. Now, the very fact that I was hiding under my brother's bed did give a very clear signal that I didn't want to kiss him.
Yeah.
But coming out under the bed, my only option was to scream, which was in like a huge overreaction. Mm. I just found him repulsive.
Mm.
So that training from the very young overruled this chakra, this sephira in the psyche, and it does with all of us. It will dull you to the land because people tell you that you're being silly. Mm-hmm. It will dull you to your boundaries because you've got to have your mother's love to grow up. So therefore, you've just been trained, if your mother says this, you have to do that, and you may not say no. And the wounds that we get down here are so huge. And the trouble is that we salve ourselves by helping other people from this level, because that's how we get our strokes. And if we will do that to support other people, we don't learn how to do it to relate to the planet. We do it as a survival mechanism in the hope that the other to whom we're attaching will teach us how to live on the planet. But of course they don't know.
Of course they don't. Oh, God. But what makes me so... Oh, I feel gutted, actually. You speaking about the children who died rather than grow up because they weren't receiving enough attention, is that a thing which I've watched and felt as if, I don't know, blood might pour out of my tear ducts or something. It makes me so heart sore. Is over and over and over again, I've seen recently young women with very tiny beings feeding the tiny being, whether with breast or bottle, whilst looking not at the tiny being, but at their fucking phone.
Yes.
And that I
am
both kind of terrified for our culture and absolutely overwhelmed by grief for those children, that what will they potentially have to do or be in order to actually receive their mother's gaze?
Yes.
And the easiest way, obviously, for us to, as a tiny being, to interrupt the gaze between the parent and the phone is to be a proper pain in the ass, to scream or to wail or to throw the phone on the floor and stamp on it, which is what it deserves, or to be horribly ill.
Yes.
And those two options are not good for the person embodying the options, and they are not good for the collective. Well, they're just not good for anyone.
No. And Dr. Marty says that in his experience, he is a medical doctor, and he wrote this book more than 10 years ago, so he's still studying the matter. He said every single person he's seen as a patient with a chronic disease, any chronic disease, got it because they denied who they were and became who they thought other people needed them to be.
Mm.
And that's exactly the point of the ego in Kabbalah, which is it is who you think you are.
Yeah.
It's not your true self. It's who you think you are, who you think you have to be in order to get the attention that you need.
Yeah. And quite often that's divided into two quite different people, who you think you are and who you think you need to be.
Yeah.
And then
and yes, neither
and
of them
you get
is
a row of inspectors all going, "Oh, shit."
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're getting more and more into this because, apart from anything else, what we were talking about at the beginning, and I want to tell you some of my foraging stories at some point into some time, is about the experience of being with the land or the experience of being with the person. Because in my case, one of the reasons why I'm open to the land is because I was trained by my amazing bishop to do exactly the same with humans, which is to say, do you want to be gathered? but do you want my assistance? Do you want to be in a talking relationship with me about faith? Mm. And it is actually the same as do you want to be gathered? Because you ask psychically, do you want to know? And I try to do it on social media as well when I come across something that makes my heart curl, you know, or something. And I will go, is there a place to put anything or do I walk away? Mm. So it is actually the same thing. I've got to listen to my gut.
Totally.
Is there something I can say here that is going to bring compassion or sorrow? Because those are the two sides of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But learning this kind of thing, it has to be experience. And what you get through your phone is information.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And information is utterly, utterly useless until you've tried it.
Well, information is not only useless, but it's also lost on us if we don't embody it. And so that's why, I mean, all the great educators of forever have basically said that we learn through experience. Mm-hmm. And that, therefore, to teach, which is our phones are sort of trying to do to us, through information is kind of a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Because we are an experientially learning organism.
Yeah, and look at us spouting information and sharing information all over the internet. And so much of it is what we call Lucific truth, which means it's a partial truth, which is much more dangerous than an outright lie.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about last time with it, slightly off or slightly off being so much harder to fix than wholly off. Yeah. The outright lie being so much easier to see than the partial lie.
Yeah.
And in these post-truth, post-accountability, post-anything at all sane or sensible times.
Yeah.
How do we get there from picking marjoram?
Well, it's the same thing. It's about the misuse and bad training of that aspect of our gut.
Yes.
Mm. The gut now tells us what is safe amongst humans and how we can behave. And we'll certainly get a gut instinct about somebody being bad for us, but it's a gut instinct based mostly on the training. Mm. I'm not safe. I'm not protected. You know, and we have not been trained in religion either to rest in the arms of the divine. We've been trained that it's a judgmental, nasty piece of work that's more interested in what you're doing under the bedclothes than whether you've got a bed to do it in.
That's so tragic, isn't it? Because when you were speaking about, so we were talking about the mothers who aren't looking at their children and what might arise out of that. Another little bit of my brain was going off on, well, maybe if they're not finding reciprocity and relationship in the eyes of their mother, maybe they will find it in the arms of the land. But of course, they probably won't, because they're going to be trained to believe that the land is something over which they have dominion and in which they won't find communication.
Mm. And they'll be concerned that they can't get a mobile signal on top of darkness.
Oh, God.
And I know the temptation. I fell for this one once. I went whale watching off the coast of New England. There weren't very many whales. And it was one of the first times that I realised that I had this feyness of the witch,
mm-hmm.
which I channeled into the Christianity, but it was there because it was the first day of the whale watching season and there were no whales and everybody was really disappointed. And I was really disappointed too. So I actually went inside and I went down into me and I said, are the whales? Please, would you show yourself? And the answer was, why? I was quite clear, why?
Mm.
And I said, for no reason except I'm asking, please, would you show yourselves? And within 5 minutes, there was a spout.
Mm.
And you know, I never saw them because I was too busy taking photographs.
Ah, oh. Yeah.
I was too busy recording it. This was before social media, but recording it so I could show it to my mother or show it to other people that I saw whales. I didn't see the whales. And this is the way the world is at the moment, which is let's record it rather than experiencing it. And I spent most of my life doing exactly that. It took huge levels of trauma to bring me into the present moment and make me just sit with it.
Yeah. Well, which is, you know, maybe that's where we have arrived collectively, is that the huge levels of trauma in which our society and our culture finds itself is maybe, hopefully, perhaps, going to bring us back to the place where we will start to sit with it. And, well, what I see is that there's going to be some kind of possibly, I mean, I'm not making some great dire prediction here, but it seems likely that there's going to be a kind of split between those for whom the present moment means we have to stop, we have to be still, we have to listen, we have to remember what we really are and go back to more earth-honouring ways. And those who are too afraid to even feel and just can't, and so invest themselves further and further and further into technology until they become, well, potentially even part technology. You know, if what's his name, Musk has got his way, we'll all have computers implanted in our brains, you know, and that's not what I hope for at all for a version of the world or humanity for my children or grandchildren or anyone. But I can see that there's a kind of, there's an invitation from the world of technology, which is very, very much where AI and human become a thing, which almost seems to forget that the human was ever an animal.
It is Lucific, because the internet, vastly useful though it is, you know, without the internet, I wouldn't have got a humane rat trap to take the rats out of the chicken coop, you know, because I wouldn't have been able to afford the one at the shop, and I'm really sorry, local shop, but without the internet, incredibly useful. But the internet is our substitute for being psychic.
Yeah.
It's actually the result of our calling to be in relationship with everybody else, but we missed. We've gone into cyberspace instead of into contemplative space where you can hear the cry of the other.
So there must be a world where it could be both.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what part of the reason for the COVID-19 crisis is for us to try and discover it. And we have to do something, because the astrological conjunctions this year and next year are really wake-up time.
Yeah.
We have, America still is the greatest consuming country that we know of. I mean, China's catching up, obviously. But America has its Pluto return in February. It was founded 240 years ago, and Pluto does one circuit of the sun. And Pluto is death and transformation. It's the end of a cycle and the start of a new cycle. So come February, something after February, after that something major is going to happen around America. And of course, it could go one of two ways. Or it could go several ways. But we are at a critical point. I'm not talking about harmonic convergences, about us all going om, because in my experience lately, a load of the people who do go om will then go around and slap somebody around verbally later. That's not the point of going om. But we've got another wake-up call. We get wake-up calls all the time. And, you know, eventually, I don't think we'll destroy this planet.
No, me neither.
But I do think there is a possibility that the planet one day will say, enough, you may not eat.
Yeah.
I need to go back into myself and regroup. And you little fleas on my surface need to go and find somewhere else for a while.
No offence to fleas.
No offence to fleas. But really, to be honest, we're only damaging her skin. I mean, that's very nasty. But her core is still strong and sound. Thank God we haven't found anything in the core we want to dig out yet.
Oh, don't. God. Oh. How are we doing for time?
We're on 28 minutes, so we have
okay,
a little
so
longer.
Have I got time quickly to ask you about your new book, or is that...
Oh, yes. Only quickly, though, because I want to talk about the other book as well, if I may. But yes, I have a new book out. It's out, published now. It's called Kabbalah and Healing, published by O Books. Available, yes, through good bookshops, but not a lot of us are going to bookshops lately, so it's up on Amazon. And it is basically, it's 18 months out of date already. That's the thing about a book, if you're with a regular publisher. By the time it comes out, with any luck, you've moved on, which is why there's no problem sharing information for me. Because there's always more to learn. I wouldn't write that book that way now. It's a good book. People are being kind and saying it's a good book. It's getting good reviews, and I'm doing podcasts about it, which is lovely. But I'm not the person who wrote the book anymore. So in a way, that's quite nice because you detach from it. You're very pleased about your child going to school and everybody liking it. But actually, your mind is already working towards the conception of the next child. But it basically is all about what I term the four relationships. You have to clear the four relationships for healing. And a lot of this is experiential, having done it. And I'm not telling you that what I did is going to heal you because you are different from me. But it may come in useful. But you have to clear your relationship with the divine, with yourself, with others and the earth. And if you clear your relationship with the divine, the others flow naturally. And if you clear your relationship with the earth, the others flow naturally. But if you start with self-esteem or you start with loving others without those pivotal points, it seems to me you don't get the help and the grace that you really, really need to do it. And of course, my job as a minister is to talk about clearing with the divine, and probably your job as the witch is to talk about clearing with the earth.
Well, and the divine too. But
yes, but this panentheistic view that the divine is in everything.
Exactly.
And if we are projecting our anger at religion, that's not the divine, that's our anger with religion. And that's our anger being expressed about how we were not attended to or loved, so we were able to learn about a loving divinity. You know, if all you've ever meant is conditional love and you must behave in a certain way, you're going to project that onto your concept of the divine unless you can learn otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's what the book's all about. And so the largest part of it is about clearing the beliefs about the divine and what blocks them. And it's our beliefs that are set in stone, set in commandment, that usually blocks them because you can't see another view. You're absolutely engaged in the need to hold that belief.
So from your perspective as a vicar, what is there a core belief that prevents people from clearing that?
Judgmental God.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I had a feeling that might be it.
It's the judgmental God. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of the name of God, of Yahweh. And one of the things that's come to me since the book, and I wish to God it would come to me in time for the book, but it'll go in the next one, which will probably be Kabbalah and Ecology. Is really simply that in the beginning, it was the Elohim who created the earth, the heavens and the earth, the whole of the universe. And the Lorica, the St. Patrick Lorica, embraces that. It's beautiful. Maybe we'll end with a line from that. But the Elohim, who is the creative mother force, then when humanity is formed, it becomes Yahweh Elohim. Then only when humanity is born onto earth after the leaving of Eden, does it become, Eve says, I have gotten a man from the Lord, meaning I'm pregnant. And then it's Yahweh on their own. And Yahweh, as we've talked about this before, the breath. Yahweh is the breath. You cannot be born without saying the name of God. And you cannot die without saying the name of God.
But isn't Yahweh is a very... I mean, I get what you're saying, but how? In which case, how come, or maybe I'm missing the point or something... Surely Yahweh's not that old as a god?
Probably not, but these things link on to previous things and previous things and previous things. So, but the point I'm trying to get at is that what is they're trying to explain in the first version of Genesis, not so much in the edited version, which is the one that we've got, is this idea that there are the two aspects of the one. And the Yahweh aspect is the law. The L-O-R-E or the L-A-W, whichever you like, it only comes into creation on its own when humanity is on earth in the living duality, where you get to choose. Because Yahweh is all about choice and consequence. Because the second you start to breathe, one day you'll stop breathing. So that's a consequence. So that God, if you read the Old Testament, understanding that whenever it mentions the Lord, it's talking about the law, that if you do that, this will result. It's an eye for an eye, if you like. And there's less focus on when it says God in the Old Testament. Whenever it says God, that's El, or the Elohim.
So sorry.
There's
one.
Okay, we paused for the postman. So in a way, Yahweh is challenging us to understand choice and consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly Yahweh in the Old Testament is a bit of a tough nut. Let's go to war. Let's do this. Then you can learn.
Right.
And all the way through the prophecies, I wouldn't do that. Oh, you want to do that? Right. Let's go and do it. And then you can learn. And then at the end of it, when everybody's going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, we're slaves, we're this, we're that. Then along comes El saying, you prats. But you know something? I love you even more because you're willing to learn, and I will be through with you through this healing. And you can watch this interplay. It's just not taught.
Mm.
And I don't think a lot of it's even left there. But when you read the spaces between the words and you're looking for it, it's this old thing of it's hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yes, and like everything in plain sight, you won't see it unless you already know what you're looking for.
Mm. Yes. Yes, and we're sort of on time now, so can I...
Tell me about the Lorica.
The Lorica. Well, there's this thing called St. Patrick's Lorica, and it's a poem of kind of protection, but I haven't learned all of it off by heart, and I don't know this particularly well, but I'm going to try and say it. One of the lines is lovely. I bind unto myself this day the virtues of the starlit heaven, the glorious sun's life-giving ray, the whiteness of the moon at even, the flashing of the lightning free, the whirling wind's tempestuous shocks, the stable earth, the deep salt sea around the old eternal rocks.
Mm.
Isn't that lovely?
Who wrote it?
Well, we have no idea. We think it's credited to St. Patrick, but I don't know that it is. But it's about binding yourself to the whole of creation.
Mm.
It does go on, and there's all stuff about demons and this and that, but I don't bother with that bit, frankly. Because if you get the earth, if you get the connection to the earth right and the connection to the divine right, you don't need anything else. You don't need the protection against the demons.
Mm.
Because you are Christed. You are part of the process. You're part of the healing.
Yeah. That, I mean, yeah, I know we run out of time, but just quickly, the that's one of the things that I think is... the radical trust that comes with being truly in connection with earth and the divine.
Mm.
That trust, that knowing that my body and the body of the earth are one, my spirit and the spirit of all is one, etc., 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 means that I don't need protection, in inverted commas. Mm. I don't need to spend hours reading psychic self-defense or you know, finding spirits with 20 arms and just as many swords, because I believe that my work is exactly in alignment with what is, and that when you have that level of trust, that's more powerful than any amount of protection, and it's more authentic than any amount of protection because it speaks to being in alignment.
Yes, I'm not always there, but when I am, that's real.
Yeah.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.